Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. University of Maryland Women's Health at 1-800-492-5538 or www.umm.edu/womencenter. And the number here is 410-319-8888. Teachers, students, parents, interested citizens, join the conversation with Dr. Andres Alonzo, CEO of Baltimore City Schools, here on the Mark Steiner Show. As you're saying, his sixth year, and we're talking during the break, this is you're the longest serving urban superintendent in the country.
That is correct, sir.
Well, you know what? This is a hard job. And, yeah. You know, the contexts are intensely political. And, you know, people get burnt out. And cities get burnt out as well. And boards change. And with boards or mayors changing, then, you know, things change. And, you know, I think of it as a part of the problem of what is happening in urban education in America. You cannot lead districts that have enormous challenges towards a new place if you're starting anew every 2 or 3 years and you lose continuity, you lose learning. And if you think about, you know, the 20, 25 other cities like Baltimore that share similar characteristics, and many of them, there have been multiple transitions already. And I think it's a problem in terms of the context, and part of why it's so important is because there's not a single urban district in America that is successful in teaching its students to standards. And, you know, there's always a local contextual conversation about what that means, but part of what we need to be talking about it is, you know, it can't be local if it's common to so many cities. And, you know, so much is about structures that are at play. So much is about the inability to mobilize, you know, all the different elements at work in order to make a difference for kids. So it's, you know, I think that I'm in a unique and privileged position right now because even though the challenges are of a different magnitude than when I arrived, there is the possibility of doing something that is sustainable that I think matters to Baltimore and is quite closely watched nationally, by the way. People pay attention to what Baltimore is doing.
So there are a lot of things to talk about here. And, folks, I do want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Many of you had questions that stopped me today asking to ask Dr. Alonzo, and I'd like to have you ask them yourself. I'll ask them your questions for you, but it'd be good if you answer them yourself at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Jump onto our Facebook page, where I'll be checking in a minute and see what you've written there. But 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. But there are a lot of things that I've been in the paper lately, like that starting the school year with less than 22 schools without principals.
Well, can I say that that's inaccurate?
Why is it inaccurate?
Because there are principals in the schools. They're just not permanent principals. Every single school has a person who is certified and licensed to be principal leading the school. The difference in Baltimore is that because we have a process that engages the community in naming a school leader, I don't simply do what happens in other districts, which is that you replace a person and you replace them with another one. I bring the community into a process to select the next person. That is very difficult to do in summers when teachers are not there, parents are not there, students are not there. I have students representative in school family councils in the high schools. So the scores came in very, very late this year. We still haven't gotten the high school graduation numbers. So we
made that
because of the MSAs came in late. The graduation rate has to be verified by MSDE in terms of now we have new cohort graduation data that actually tracks individual kids over a period of 4 and 5 years. and that data cleansing process has not been verified by MSDE. So in the absence of data, we held certain decisions. Once the data came in, then we made decisions in the context of the entirety of a school's life. And once I felt that certain decisions had to be made, we made the decisions. But rather than bypass a community feedback process that I think is incredibly valuable to the district, we appointed managing assistant principals. And now we have a school family council process where every school comes to the table and makes a recommendation to me about who the principal should be, which I think has been enormously valuable in the life of schools in Baltimore. It's one of the reasons why our schools are growing rather than declining.
But, I mean, there are people who are – we'll get to the phone, Sheila Mar, you're the first caller up. We'll get it to 410-319-8888. But there have been a lot of stories, obviously in The Sun, some other newspapers, and The Brew, that there have been people who many principals have been let go. There was this whole argument over the principals, I think it was Abbotson, who felt that your move was vindictive. The hearing absolved them of cheating on the exams, but yet they were still let go. So
again, it's like, try to get the full context of these things, folks, in terms of and by the way, one of the things that I have decided over time is that, you know, we sail through storms. And, you know, my job is about serving the kids of the city. It's not necessarily to respond to the newspapers. If I'm opening schools and I'm getting 3,000 new kids registered in the week before school, and I need to make sure that every one of them is served, then my responsibility is to focus on what's happening in the schools, not to be responding to the newspaper. In the case of Abbotson, and it is very, very difficult for me to talk about personnel cases that are going through a due process, there was a series of steps that led to my recommendation of termination in several instances in the school. There was, of course, a due process that led to recommendations, not decisions, recommendations by a hearing officer. The recommendations went to the board. The board heard them in their judicial capacity. A decision was rendered by the board on Monday that actually disagreed with the hearing officer's recommendations on the basis of oral argument. And what happened at that point was that one person was terminated. The other person, the board decided that they can come back to the district after another year of essential suspension without pay, and that at that point they can come back, and it is my discretion about where to place them. That person still has the due process right of appealing that decision by the board, not recommendation, to the state board. And what we are sometimes forgetting is how these arguments change. We're forgetting how 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the conversation in the district was about the inflation of scores. And we are forgetting how, ahead of any other district in the country, I took certain steps, such as putting external monitors in schools, that were almost guaranteed in some cases to lead to a deflation of scores. And what we saw, and I'm speaking generally because I certainly don't want to transgress on the issue of personnel, what we saw is that in a number of schools, and we had 16 investigations going at the same time, we had extraordinary declines, and I'm talking about 20, 25 points in both reading and math, coinciding with the introduction of external monitors. And in those cases, I had a responsibility to investigate the reason for those declines. And those cases, you know, MSDE became a partner in the investigations. And when we thought we had enough evidence to move in some instances, that is what we did. I did not terminate anyone until we had reports from MSDE that verified that testing answers had been erased and that the erasures had stopped in the year when the external monitors had come into the school. And as in every, you know, I love America, as in every judicial instance in America, people have due process rights to challenge the evidence, and sometimes things emerge that were not there at the moment of the management decision. But my responsibility is to the kids of Baltimore and the schools of Baltimore. And I thought at the time that these early recommendations were covered that the coverage was extraordinarily premature. And I also found it ironic that some of the same people who had plastered the front page of newspapers with the pictures of schools when their scores had declined were now questioning whether there had been a jumping to a decision when, in fact, a process had taken place that basically led me to believe that something systematically wrong had happened in the school. And mind you, that I have never said that a particular person cheated. What I have always established as my standard, and it's my standard as a superintendent of the district, is that if there is evidence that something happened systematically in the school and you're a leader in the school, then I am not really interested in knowing what you knew or didn't know. There is a kind of obligation as part of the job to have known about it, and that is the reason for my decisions.
Well, I want to ask some other questions about this, and some other issues have come up, but let me go back to the phones, for the first time. 410-319-8888, Dr. Andres Alonso in the studio, and Lamar, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
You're welcome.
Just listening, and you basically said that the particular superintendent has been there for 6 years, and that's the longest tenure of any superintendent in the country. But in these 6 years, I've actually seen a lot of schools that have been closed, whether it be Pimlico Middle School or Walbrook Junction High School, and the establishment of a lot of charter schools. So, I mean, in all respect due, Mr. Superintendent, are you just allowing these things to happen? And, you know, so, and is that why you've been in this position so long?
Well, can I say that I didn't close Walbrook? And that, as a matter of fact, I put two schools in Walbrook, Bluford Drew Jameson and Baltimore Civitas. I did not close Pimlico. That happened before my tenure. We have closed some schools. We have also created a number of schools. And in terms of the reason for my tenure, first of all, I'm a very lucky man. Baltimore is a remarkable place. There were so many people who, before my arrival, were looking for room to run, and I think I gave it to them. We're lucky in some ways that we got early wins. And, you know, it's interesting because Kaya Henderson and Vincent Gray 2 weeks ago had a press conference to celebrate their outcomes over time. Ours are better, even after the introduction of testing monitors in every school. And then more important than that, I think that the work that we did to hold on to kids is really revolutionary in the context of not only Baltimore, but the country. And that work created a level of good faith and support in the district that explains my tenure. I've always said that I was here for 10 years, but I never thought I would have the opportunity to be here for 10 years. And because other urban superintendents don't get to year number 5, let alone year number 10, the average tenure of an urban superintendent is 2.7 years. Pretty soon I will have doubled that. So to me, it hasn't been about allowing things to happen. Every leader has to allow things to happen. And my philosophy of management, and I'm sure it's going to come up later, is that you have to empower people to lead. You have to give people the resources and the opportunity to lead. You have to hold them accountable. You have to provide guidance. But the real strength of the district is not in the superintendent and in a central office. The real strength of the district is in the schools, in the parents, in the communities, in the teachers. That has been my philosophy. And if I have supported charters, and charters in Baltimore City are different than charters anywhere else because they're mine. I authorize them. I evaluate them. I have to recommend the principal. They work with me. It's because many times charters are places where those things take place. leadership, empowerment, community building. What I tried to do for the rest of the schools in the city was to give them the opportunity to do the same things that charters do and to have the tools and resources to be able to do that. And I did that very, very quickly. Year number one, fair student funding. That has been a key lever in the work.
Now, Lamar, I hear you trying to say something. We've got another caller at 410-319-8888. But go, say what you were about to say.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that actually taking money out of the public school system and giving it to private entities to invest in the charter. And it actually serves less students when you have charter schools versus public schools.
Can I say that charters are public schools? We do not have private entities running charters. And the enrollment of our traditional schools, which had been going down a percentage of 2.5% every single year for 40 years, has been now been growing by, for 5 years. In October, when I announce my numbers, they're going to be an enrollment numbers. They're going to be over 85,000 kids in the system. We've just enrolled 3,000 new kids. In 2007, when I walked in, the enrollment of the district was 81,000, and it had been declining every single year for 40 years, and the prediction was that at this point in time, we would have been at 67,000. We're going to be at 85,000 next year. And when, you know, when we talk about coverage, et cetera, part of what I have to remember is what matters and what is the evidence that matters most. And to me, what matters most in terms of how the city feels about the schools is their willingness to put their kids in their schools.
So let me, Lamar, appreciate the call. We're going to go to Hank, our next caller, in just a minute at 410-319-8888. But there's some things that I really have to hit. I wasn't going to do this till later, but let me do it now with the charter schools. There's some people who there's a real mixed message about charter schools. I mean, there's a whole, all the studies have shown that charter schools in the whole do not perform any better than schools that are non-charter schools, right?
Yeah.
But there's also a sense in the city that if you do not get into a citywide school, if you do not get into a what they call the old citywide schools or a charter school, you are then creating another tiered system. I've had parents say, you know, like, my kid didn't get into Poly, my kid didn't get into this charter school, now I have to send them to Northwestern, I'm moving to the county. That's real, though. That happens to lots of parents whose kids do not get into the schools they wanted to get into because they have to apply now, and so they end up, and some of the schools are becoming dumping grounds all over again.
Can I say the following, which is that, number one, there are very few high school charter schools in the city. There's Maths. I can't think of any. Oh, and there's Independence. That's it. So if the context is about high school, that's not a relevant conversation. The reality is that we have many, many traditional schools in the city that are being overrun by kids trying to get in. They do not grab the conversation about, they're not sexy in the way that some of the charters are. They don't promote themselves in the same way. I'll give you an example of what I mean. I was at Thomas Jefferson Elementary Middle this morning, a school with an IB program. We're having to take kids out of Thomas Jefferson and send them to their zone school because the school is filled to capacity. That school is not talked about. A school like Gilmore, for example, which 2 years ago was the lowest performing school in the system and was in the newspapers, has increased its enrollment in a year by over 100 kids. They're going to have 100 more kids this year than last year. The system is full of jewels. It's also full of schools that are still struggling to remake themselves. Booker T is a very different place today than it was a year ago. I walk into schools all the time, and what I'm getting is tremendous energy. Some charters sell themselves, and I support that because they should be doing that, and they benefit the entire system. But the idea of a two-tier system, Baltimore was always about a two-tier system.
Always.
Always. And part of what my work has been about is has been about breaking that up by creating schools that parents want to opt into, whether they're charter schools or whether they're traditional schools that, you know, you should not be a prisoner of your zip code, as in if you are, you know, if you're in the east side or if you're in the west side, And there's a school that you want to go to, we should be giving parents the opportunity to send that school there. And one of the most significant facts as well of the growth in our work has been choice, as in giving parents who before would have opted to go to a parochial school or go to a county school the opportunity to find a school that works for them. So in the last 3 weeks, what we're seeing is a huge movement within the city where parents basically like find what they want, and then movement into the city from the outside, which would have been inconceivable a few years ago. And I don't want to hear that it's the economy. You know why? Because but that's what I hear from the usual skeptics. Because the economy is impacting the country in the same way, and every other urban district in America is losing enrollment.
So how do you make some decisions made? Some parents have said to me that look, I my child is a straight A student, wanted to play sports, and they didn't get the poly, and we're told poly doesn't make a decision. 25th Street makes a decision, or North Avenue now.
There's a composite score. There are certain schools in the city.
So how are these choices made for people?
Their choices are not made. There are certain schools in the system that have entry criteria. Poly is one, Dunbar is one, Western is one, and these are traditional entry criteria.
Right.
There are other schools in the city like Mervo or Carver or Edmondson that have lower entrance criteria, because in order to get into the career and technical education programs, they require a certain level of skills on the part of the students. There are other schools in the city that have lotteries, because that has been part of the way they were created. Digital Harbor, for example, has more applications per seat than City or Poly. So does Coppin. So does NAF. There are schools in the city that, on the basis of their size, so does Independence, have far greater magnetic power than the traditional schools. That's information that anybody has access to. We have presented it to the public, but the myth of what Baltimore has been is very difficult to break.
The question is, how is the decision
and
made?
The parent is given a set of choices that the child chooses. And then their algorithms run that try to give the child and the parent the choice that is highest in their list. And what we've been able to do over the past 2 years is have roughly 98% of the kids be given one of the top three choices. And you can choose among the 30-odd choices in the list, any ones you want. And then what we try to do is match the choice to the ranking.
North Avenue makes the decision, not the school.
Absolutely. As in, everybody thinks that I give schools enormous flexibility. I give schools no flexibility whatsoever over accepting kids or throwing out kids. I think that is where the district has an obligation to the child that preempts any right on the part of the school. Today, for example, and I won't name names, I was petitioned by a charter school to move two children out of the school because they have poor attendance. And my response was, absolutely not. Once the kids are in, you own them. Otherwise, what you would have is enormous gaming around who the kids are.
Let's try to get a couple calls in here. 410-319-8888. Hank and Mark are the next two callers up. And Hank, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Steiner.
Welcome, Hank.
How you doing? Mr. Alonzo. How are you doing today, young man?
Good, sir. And I'm 55. I'm far from young, young man.
We're as young as we feel, young man.
I'm feeling very young today.
Okay. Here's the deal, right? There's nothing at all wrong with charter schools. My youngest daughter graduated with the first coming out class of Digital Harbor.
Great.
Right? My youngest child graduated from Baltimore School out at the old Southeast Middle, right? And he actually graduated on time with his peers, right? Because he had messed up in elementary school. So if they give you a chance to... Now my son is sitting at home. He sat home 2 days, right? The first 2 days in school. He sat home, he slept. Yesterday, my phone started ringing from Fortis, from every other place.
You know why? Because, thank you, thank you. And I hope you say thank you, because sometimes I get the email from the parent saying, how dare you call me, right? My child doesn't even go to your schools anymore. And you know what I always answer? We rather err on the side of bothering the parent than err on the side of letting a child be untouched. We have systems that if you are out 2 days, somebody calls you. Somebody visits your house.
So, and finish, before we have to go to break, Hank, finish what you were saying.
I've had that system call me. The day my son is not in school, I get a recording, your son didn't show up to school today. Right? So I commend y'all for that, because at least I know that day I can confront my child. The school said you didn't show up today.
Yeah.
Right? And Mrs. McMillan up at that school, me and her stayed in contact with each other.
You know,
right?
Thank you.
If you don't get up and go to school to find out about your kids, you can't blame nobody else but yourself.
And you know what? Why is that not in the front page of the newspapers? That we are one of the few school systems in America that are so on top of this question of what is happening with every individual child. That, you know, why do you think the graduation rate, the dropout rate for African-American males has been reduced by almost 60%? Because we're relentless in terms of the attention to the children. Somehow that's not important enough.
Hank, we have to take a break. And Dr. Lawrence, we have to take a break. We'll come right back at 410-319-8888. And Kim and Shonda, you're the next two callers up. We'll come right to your call. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Go to www.mecu.com for more information. We're here with Dr. Andres Alonso, 410-319-8888. I promise to go right to the phones, and we will. And Kim, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Kim. You're on the air.
Hello.
You're on the air, Kim.
Hello. Dr. Alonzo?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I'm a grandparent, and I volunteer at my grandchildren's school.
You got to name names.
School.
You got to name names. What school?
Edgecombe Elementary and Pimlico Elementary, and they also go to KIPP.
Yeah.
And when one of them, and I have a problem, I like KIPP, but the only problem I had with it being a chartered school is that they said that when they opened up the elementary school that the siblings would be able to attend, and that wasn't true.
Okay, I need more information because, you know, sometimes it's, I don't know exactly what's being communicated.
Well, they said that if you have a sibling and they go to the upper grade, they could go to the lower grade. But then once we tried, they said it was two separate schools. But now that they're in the building, they're still operating as two separate schools. And then it was just a lot of back and forth. So I just put my daughter the child at another school.
Okay, so can I ask you to do me a favor and maybe I can help you? Email me. And give me your name and your child's name in the fax. My email address is alonso, A-A-L-O-N-S-O, at bcps.k12.md.us. And if you can't remember it, get it from your child's school tomorrow.
I'll go online.
Yeah. And give me the fax. And then once I have the fax, I can go and follow up. Just for the record, KIPP is now in one location, the old Roland Patterson, and it is still two separate schools, the elementary and
the middle
school, and the hope is that over time it becomes a K-12 campus. But there's still two separate schools with two different lottery enrollment processes. But if there was a protocol or regulation that was not obeyed, then it's my responsibility to go back and check.
My second concern is, the reason why I say this is because, see, I know that in Baltimore City, it's not as hard to get into a school like it is in Baltimore County.
Well, it depends because
and I say this because anybody can go to your chartered schools or in Baltimore City without, you know, and I'm saying this from experience.
But there's a lottery process. And a school like Montessori, Baltimore Montessori, by the way, has an 800-person waiting list. So you cannot just get in. You have to participate as part of a process. We do have charter schools that are not full. And
well, I understand that, sir, so, but you're not hearing me out. What I'm saying is, as far as address-wise, I live in Baltimore County, and my children live in Baltimore City.
Okay.
I have students that live near me in Pikesville that go to your city schools.
And we need to be charging them.
Because not only that, I'm saying it because it frees up a slot for a child that really wants to go to that school.
I got you. What and by the way, that is against board rules, as in board rules and regulation, as in if there is a spot and a Baltimore City resident wants that spot, the school cannot offer that spot to an out-of-district person.
This is what I was told. It didn't make a difference because they don't have – y'all don't have strongholds in place like Baltimore County did to wean out peoples that don't. Because in Baltimore County, they take you through so much in order to get your child into a school that if your child didn't live in that area, your child not getting in that school.
But can I just say that's part of our philosophy, that we need to accommodate parents. As in some cases, what you're going to have is abuse. And in other cases, what you're going to have is that if we start putting obstacles in the way of parents, then what it looks is that we're the same old district that doesn't care about parents. So you got to give me specifics, and I need to go back and check your case, because if something didn't happen for you that needed to happen, then I need to fix it.
Kim, thank you so much for joining us. Let's go back to the phone. We have a lot of people calling in now at 410-319-8888. Robin, you're on the air.
Okay, hello, how are you?
Very well, welcome.
Hello, Dr. Alonzo, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I just wanted to know answer to a question. I know a couple of years ago, I think it was under the Shirley Dixon administration, there was an aggressive effort to try to improve the dropout rate in the Baltimore City public schools. And what I wanted to know is, what is the status as of now? Has it improved or is it getting worse?
I'll just
listen to your answers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have had the greatest reduction in the number of dropouts in the country over the past 5 years. The dropout rate has been reduced by almost 60%. Early next month, and a lot of it has been through the help of the community. I mean, we engage lots of people to bring kids back. It's been about the work of the schools. Early next month, we're going to have our first 5-year cohort rate, meaning that for the first time ever, we're going to know of the kids who actually enter in 2007, how many of them graduated or are still in school in 2012. And they're the same kids. There's no, you know, it has to be verified. If the kids are not there, they're considered dropouts unless there is evidence that they enrolled in another district or have gone someplace else. And my hope is that what you're going to see is going to be so amazing in the context of a district where really half the kids did not graduate from high school when I came in. So huge improvement. It's been about what that gentleman called about before, which is that if you're not in school, you get a phone call. If the school is not working out for you, we figure out another school for you to go to. If you have 20 credits to make up, then we put you on an extended day schedule and bring you in during summers in order for you to make up the credits. If you tell us that what you need is a different form of a different discipline, then we figure out a way to get you a discipline that is going to get you motivated. And sometimes we fail. I think that too many times we fail. But there's also a huge accountability element, which is about kids, as in if the kids don't show up, you lose money. I don't know if people realize that schools are funded on the basis of their enrollment. So if you're a school and you lost 200 kids, it might not have mattered in terms of, you know, what you had available. You lose 30 kids today, you might lose $150,000, meaning that you have to cut your staff, which schools never want to do. So there's a huge accountability element around this question of, I need to hold on to my kids. And then there's a huge accountability element around making it legitimate. Are the kids really there? As in, if the kid is not there, somebody's calling the house. And, you know, that to me, when I first got named to the district, I was asked on my very first day, how should we hold you accountable? And my response, and this is on the record, it was taped, is I should be held accountable by the graduation rate for the city. So it's hugely important to me.
Thank you so much for that call. Let's go back to the phones. A lot of people are calling in. I want to get through Halim. I know we're going to get to Rebecca, Timothy. We're going to get to your calls, even if I have to interrupt Dr. Alonso to get to your calls.
Dr. Alonso can be very long-winded.
It's cultural. Halim,
excuse me.
Halim, you're on the air.
Yes. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening, Halim.
Well, you know, I've read and so many details that Alonso is refuting. And I want to know about the funds. To say that in Baltimore City, more funds are being allocated to administrative costs than to actual education of the students, and that the ratio in Baltimore City is the highest ratio in the state, administrative costs versus education children.
So first of all, let me just say that over the past 5 years, the size of the central administration was cut by 33%. And the amount of dollars going to schools increased by hundreds of millions of dollars. Schools control 80% of their budgets. The money's in the schools. So I don't know what these things mean, because what might be called administration might be computers in schools, as in what is in a particular category is dependent on how MSD codes the categories. But in Baltimore, if far more than in any other district in the state, schools have enormous power over funds, and the funds are in the school. Just this year, we cut the central office by $13 million, and we put $20 million of savings over time in the schools because we wanted schools to be able to hold on to their spending power.
But what Halim is talking about is the impression is made that way because of the amount of money that Jerome Obelton, is that his name?
Obelton
spent on refurbishing offices at North Avenue that was written about, or the whole hullabaloo raised by the Sun over credit card dispensers, people buying things that are inappropriately spending money on dinners and travel that they shouldn't be spending on, that people are saying that we should be doing like Howard County does, which is only spend money on federal government standard when people travel, as opposed to what the school system does. So, I mean, that's where the impression comes from.
Well, but I think that part of what is missing, and you know, I've chosen not to get into a back and forth with the Sun about this because I think my focus should be on the schools. The question of context has to be thought through. In the case of Jerome, for example, this was a person coming in from the private world who is trying to compete for people to improve what we all know needs to be improved, which is the technical capacity of the school system. And as part of his budget, he chooses to do a renovation of his department. This is money that he has in his budget. He's not asking for more. And part of the question should be, what are we gaining in response, rather than a kind of knee-jerk, you know, they're spending money for this, as in what he's trying to do is attract people that we have been having difficulty attracting over time. I call that a mistaken judgment because in the context of Baltimore is seen in a particular way. But the real question is what is happening at the district level around where the money is going. If a department has a budget and as part of that department they have discretion over their budget, That's it. When it comes to the credit cards and the procurement cards, two things, because they're separate things. The credit cards were a central program. And first of all, the facts are wrong. The $500,000 is over 3 years, not 1 year. And we're talking $500,000 in a district that has a budget of $1.3 billion a year. The money is in budgets. It's categorized. A credit card is just a transactional tool. Travel. If a person is traveling under a grant and that travel has been approved and actually is part of the grant, then that is what that person does. Somehow the charge itself emerges as this is so problematic. Some of the charges were actually mine. And part of what is interesting is that, you know, I'll tell you what happened to me last year. I only spent $6,400 in credit card unreimbursed charges in the entire year. 1,000 of that was AASA membership, right? 800 of that was my only dinner with the board over 4 years in order to get to a resolution in my contract because we had been negotiating for 8 months. And we were not on the same page. It was a grand investment. There were 11 people in that meal. So that leaves nothing in a context where I am representing the district at Council of Great City Schools, Alice, et cetera, et cetera. What's left? Well, what's left is maybe like a couple of meals where I'm doing something for the benefit of the district. And if you highlight one thing without context, is going to seem abusive. But then what defines the gain for the district? And what's abuse when there's no context? I mean, nobody called Philadelphia or Chicago or L.A. and asked, you know, how are you as a superintendent dealing with these questions? So, you know, in the absence of that kind of context, I think that, the conversation becomes completely sensationalized. And then the other aspect of the conversation is that part of what I have continually pushed for is flexibility on the part of people. You cannot push for flexibility in leadership and then be standing at a gate providing permission at every step in the way. And this is also important, the only charges that have even like a kind of aroma of illegality happened from an employee who had left the district and that very same day before the car had been canceled, used the car. There is no other allegation of illegality. There is nothing. And I personally reviewed over 1,000 transactions. And at the point where I felt that, wait a second, there's nothing there. At that point, I basically said, tighten whatever you need to tighten. Let's focus on the schools again.
Let me go back to the phone. So I promise to get on the air with you. And Rebecca, you're on the air.
Dr. Alonzo, I'll try to be succinct. I have so much to say. And I have several questions, but I'll try to keep it short. Basically, I am one of those parents who is ready to pick up and move to the county because I'm so disappointed in the state of the city schools.
Which school?
Currently, my son just started middle school, and he's going to Friendship Academy of Engineering.
Okay.
And I have a daughter at Leaf Walt.
Okay, so you're probably having different experiences since they're different schools.
Different but similar at the same time. You know, I've written letters to you in the past about Leaf Walk and administrators there and what I feel is conditions that aren't conducive to learning for the students. And unfortunately, my son didn't get into one of the better schools, for what I foresee is a better school in the city, and we were left with the Friendship Academy. And I was floored upon my first arrival on Monday morning with him at the conditions, because to me it felt like it was an institution. And I will be at your offices next week for the Office of Student Placement in the interim until I'm able to do something different or move to the county. But
okay,
you know, something has to give. So my question is, what do we do? What needs to be done to kind of bring people back or to try to motivate people to want to be there? I just don't feel like it's a lot of the school systems in the city don't promote learning. It just, you know, it just.
Well,
First of all,
if you have an issue with our schools, then it's our responsibility to figure out a place for you to be comfortable with where your child is learning. So in this context, and I do know who you are, I have to say something about Leithwalk, because Leithwalk is an extraordinary school. You feel differently. And it's a school that hundreds of parents want to get into. So Leithwalk is an extraordinary school. That Friendship School is a school that is fairly new, is going through growing processes, and if it's not working for you, and this goes back to what we were saying earlier, part of our responsibility is figure out a way that works for you. And I do need to say to you that the facts speak for themselves. As in, I just said that we were getting thousands of new entrants in the past 2 weeks. So we're not experiencing an exit anymore. We're experiencing, with huge repercussions. And then the question is, how do we hold these parents that are coming back and give them choices that they want to stick to over time? But if you're going to come to the central office next week, don't come on Tuesday because I have, meetings and responsibilities. Come up to see me on Wednesday and then we'll talk about it. Okay?
Rebecca? She gone?
Hello?
All right. Yeah. Did you hear that, Rebecca?
Yes, I'm still here. But, my last comment was that I just don't see it being on par to what Baltimore County is doing curriculum-wise and just...
Well,
it's just night and day. I've been a long-time city resident. I'm a product of the city schools myself, but that was different, a different era.
We are very far from where we need to go, but I'm going to give you another fact. Last year, Baltimore County had more dropouts than Baltimore City. So and that's a fact that I don't go around proclaiming because I want everyone to succeed. But what I want to counter is a perception of what is happening in our schools. We are trying to move mountains, and sometimes we are not able to be as great as our ambitions.
We only have like 5 or 6 minutes left, and I do want to let other people get in here. Rebecca, thanks for getting in. Let us know how it worked out.
And come to see me on Wednesday.
And please let us know how it worked out. Timothy, you're on the air. Timothy.
On all you're doing with some of the charter schools, I had a question about that. I was fortunate enough to almost have my daughter accepted into like a school like City Neighbor Hamilton. I think it's one of the best schools. It's a fantastic school. But I kind of got scared because of with the national push of math and sciences, and I see some of the stuff. We looked at a lot of test scores of some of your other schools, other charter schools. A lot of those scores are going up. They don't focus on math and sciences. So how do you hold schools like that accountable? Or what do you gauge as success with schools like that, especially going forward as you take chances on schools such as that?
Well, I think City Neighbors at Hamilton is a phenomenal learning environment. And by the way, it's a true collaboration. We gave the charter a building that was ours. They renovated the building, and now I have 2 schools there that one day are going to be a K-12 continuum. There is a misperception, once again, that charters are outperforming the traditional schools. In math, last year, the traditional schools outperformed the charters in grades 3 to 8. There's huge variability. You have great, great charter schools that are doing amazing work and charter schools that are struggling. You have traditional schools that are doing great things and some traditional schools that are struggling. But the facts are the facts. As in math, 3 to 8, traditional schools outperform the charters. So people need to start thinking of their work in a new way. I think what's coming with the Common Core in the next couple of years is going to be a game changer. We're going to have new assessments beginning in 2015 that are going to be asking the kids to write, to communicate, to be savvy in technology. So the work is going to need to change. And what schools are preparing for, and, I cannot. Thomas Jefferson, again, is an IB school and also a STEM school. So I walk into a school and I see a science lab that is full of computers. That's what I want to see. And I think that in the context of our resources, where we are struggling with resources, and I don't want to hear about the credit cards because we're talking at $1.3 billion. That's the challenge. How do we make that systemically across the entire system?
Timothy, thank you for your call. Let's get a quick thought from Mary. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mary. We don't have much time,
okay,
so.
I know you don't. Okay, Dr. Alonzo, you said you don't want to hear about the credit card.
I knew I was inviting them.
Wait.
Dr. Alonzo.
Yeah.
That's your problem. You never want to hear what the citizens need to hear because our children in these public schools, I still have to take materials to the school and take it there for the kids. What's wrong with the budget? The budget. Y'all don't have no money, but the people can go shopping at Victoria's Secret. They can go where? To Hooters and all those places. And you keep on dancing around those questions because I'm one to want to know why is it that you don't have money to put the supplies in that school that need to be in there?
The dollars are in the schools, ma'am. As in, hundreds of millions of dollars have shifted into the schools. The schools decide how to spend the dollars. So in a school, you, as part of a school family council, are giving me feedback on what the school wants to spend. Some schools want to spend the dollars on more teachers. Some schools want to spend dollars on enrichment. Some schools want to have sports activities or the arts. And that's the responsibility in the school, and it's what I want to see. And, I have absolutely no defensiveness on some of the stories that have been out there lately because what I know is that we're doing a really extraordinary job in trying to support the schools.
Well, I wish we had more time. There are many more people would like to talk to you. We have many more issues to raise, but I turn this over to listeners. Let them have their say.
Hey, thank you, Baltimore, because what I'm experiencing is an enormous amount of support and good faith, and I'm so grateful for it. Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back and look at this very huge problem in America of military suicides and men and veterans who are committing suicide at alarming rates in the United States and overseas. 410-319-88 with that and the same number. Dr. Alonzo, thanks for being in the studio with us. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
We'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.